Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, LA Times columnist, and novelist Hector Tobar has published his new book, The Barbarian Nurseries. Set in the wealthy suburbs of Orange County and the gritty barrios of Los Angeles, The Barbarian Nurseries is the story of a young, undocumented Mexican maid named Araceli and her liberal employers, Maureen and Scott Torres Thompson, and their children. A marital dispute set off by the family's financial woes leads to an inadvertent abandonment by the Torres Thompsons of their two young sons, who are left in the care of the surly Araceli. In an attempt to find the children's grandfather, Araceli takes the boys on a journey via Southern California public transit across county lines into a drama politicized by the media and legal system. Ultimately, Araceli is accused of kidnapping the two American boys and becomes a symbol for conservatives to rally against and immigrant rights activists to rally behind, while her former employers choose between letting her take the blame and the possibility of losing their children to the state. The Barbarian Nurseries is Hector Tobar's third book following Translation Nation and The Tattooed Soldier. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and a weekly columnist for the LA Times. Yesterday, we heard part one of my two-part interview. Today, part two. Did you model the firestorm that results on, you know, any number of stories that we see trickling in and out of our media that involve an undocumented person these days? Even the slightest mishap can be blown out of proportion. You know, we'll hear stories of immigrant nannies or, you know, of course, we have the less dramatic stories of the workplace raids where there's faceless undocumented people being rounded up, but somehow they don't strike the imagination as much. Did you model this media firestorm on past stories at all?
No, I didn't really model it on any particular case involving immigrants, although there are some that are alluded to, and those are actually cases that happened almost 15, 20 years ago when I first had the idea for the novel and wrote down some ideas. But no, it's based and mostly on my very sort of reluctant viewing of cable television. I don't really have cable in my house myself, but I've seen enough to get a sense of the general way it works. And you know, it, of course, you know, I mean, all the way up to Casey Anthony, the Casey Anthony case, it's something where it is just a whole industry. It's a way of looking at people and telling stories that is, you know, a huge. It just makes a lot of money for a lot of people.
I'm wondering if you can discuss a little bit about the two sort of forces that then become very engaged around this story, which is the anti-immigrant community here in Southern California, maybe particularly strong in Orange County, and then the tide of pro-immigrant forces, many, of course, the Latino community themselves, undocumented students. These are the two opposing forces that play a pretty significant role, particularly later in your book. And was that sort of intended to be a snapshot of today's political landscape on immigration?
Oh yes, definitely. I think that those people are also just one more. There are additional perspectives and points of view in a novel that has dozens and dozens of points of view, and really for me, what's interesting about those people and those institutions is the way they see Araceli. Because Araceli, it is in the beginning of the novel, she's seen in many different ways by the people she comes in contact with. She's an object of desire. She's an object of pity. A lot of people see her and think, oh, this poor woman, look, she's so big. She must have children, you know, that she's left behind. And so then as the novel progresses, there are more and more people who sort of see her, and they all have their own take on her because she's so difficult to understand. And then finally she becomes the object of sympathy. She's a symbol of this, you know, immigrant population that's been wronged, and people take up her cause, and she becomes a cause celeb, even though she doesn't really feel comfortable in that role. And then, of course, there are people who see her as representing illegality. Of course, she crossed the border illegally, and so she is a criminal. And there are people who think about, you know, undocumented immigrants in this way. She becomes she is sort of an object of scorn. And so for me, it's those two political ways of looking at Araceli are in addition to all these different ways that we have of thinking about people who come from Latin America.
The legal system, as you depict in your book, is also an interesting one, and Araceli contrasts the American legal system to the Mexican one in an interesting way. On the one hand, it's more civilized, perhaps, but on the other hand, it also offers pretty poor choices for somebody in her position who's vulnerable.
Right. She is at first arrested, and she's sort of surprised by the way she's treated. She's exposed to some of the better aspects of the American criminal justice system. She's treated, you know, she's read her rights. She's treated with some respect. Her version of the story is actually given some weight at first. And so she sort of comes to appreciate that this is a country of laws.
And she's not expected to bribe anybody.
Right, and she's not expected to bribe her way out of it, et cetera.
Yeah. Which does happen here, but not to an extent as it does perhaps in Mexico.
No, right, it doesn't. In Mexico City, where I lived, if your car is stolen, you have to pay the police to try to look for it.
Sure,
you know?
I can relate, being from India. Yes.
Okay. And so that's the way it works in our countries. And so, so she comes to it really, I mean, if you look at it, there's a certain beauty to the American legal system because the ideas that it's based on. It's based on these ideas of equality before the law, et cetera. And Araceli appreciates that. She has a public defender who gives her a little speech on what her rights are and what she can do and how the system works. And she really, really likes that. At the same time, she can see just from her own experience of being in the system how exhausted the criminal justice system is, that the courts are too crowded, the jails are crowded. And so she is a witness to the disorder of the system. Here is something, you know, that people are sort of forced to take plea bargains, for example, because there's so many cases. So she's forced to decide that she can go free if she tells a lie. Because if she tells a lie and says that she's guilty of something, then they'll reduce her sentence and let her go. We'll actually deport her directly to Mexico. Or she can decide to fight the case and say she's innocent, which is the truth, and face the consequences that she might actually spend time in jail if she loses the case. Mm-hmm. And so to her, this doesn't make sense. How can this country, based on the rule of law, present her with such horrible and illogical choices? She doesn't understand that.
I'm speaking with Hector Tobar about his book, The Barbarian Nurseries. He is a weekly columnist for the LA Times, and he's got a number of events taking place on Sunday at West Hollywood Book Fair. He'll be there on next Tuesday. He'll be at Skylight Books at 7 p.m. in Los Feliz, and on Wednesday at Romans in Pasadena at 7 p.m. You can find out more details about these book events at hectortobar.com, HECTORTOBAR.com. Let's talk a little bit about the children in your book. These two young boys, Brandon and Keenan, they're the sons of the Torres Thompsons that Araceli effectively ends up caring for, even though she wasn't hired as a nanny. I'm wondering what their sort of innocence, and education represents in terms of Southern California's future, because there is a whole generation of children being raised by Latina nannies, not only in Southern California, but across the country, because, you know, they get paid under the table. They're more, childcare is so expensive these days that American families end up hiring nannies because they will work for less. But these are women who, you know, work below the radar. We don't know much about the Latina nanny experience. And at the same time, we wonder, are they going to be influencing this new generation of Americans in a way that may bring more empathy toward the immigrant population?
Well, yes, that's exactly what happens to Brandon and Keenan by accident in my novel, is that they end up seeing this Latin American city that exists in the metropolis that they call home. I had great fun with Brandon and Keenan because they're basically the ages of my sons when I started writing the novel. Mm-hmm. They're 11 and 8. And my sons at that moment were going through this reading explosion where they read everything. And so they read a lot of young adult fiction. And so to me, young adult fiction was this – it's this allegory about how cruel – the adult world is, how unfair it is. And so I had great fun taking Brandon, especially the older boy, and putting him in this world of central Los Angeles where he can see that he's visiting a place that has this history of injustice, that it has this disorder, but it's also really interesting to him. You know, he sees homeless people. He imagines, like Don Quixote does, he imagines that they're, you know, refugees from a war. Because he's never seen really large numbers of homeless people before. He meets a boy who's sort of a semi-orphan in the first home that he stays at. And this boy tells him stories of what happens in the neighborhood. And it's really inspired by Italo Calvino's book Invisible Cities, where there's a similar sort of storytelling that takes place. And so Brandon learns about all the comings and goings in this neighborhood on the edge of the garment district of Los Angeles, the garment factories of Los Angeles. And to me, it's a comment on really the cruelty of these divisions, you know, and how they feel to a child is that they feel – he can feel very closely the absurdity and the cruelty of the city that we live in. And he experiences it with an innocence. And so I think that the children of my son's generation are going to have to deal with this if they are going to be full citizens. They have to deal with getting to know this city that has increasing social divisions, this city that gives the promise of an education to everyone, but it doesn't really reach everyone, that education. And I think that that's to me, one of the most important things I try to do in my book is to have the reader feel the pain and the absurdity of that inequality of those divisions.
Well, on that issue, then there isn't enough English language literature that depicts the Latino experience in the United States, and your book certainly goes a long way towards bringing that into the mainstream American consciousness. And you're, you know, in a generation of writers who is doing more and more and more of that. And I'm wondering how you think we're going to see this time that we're experiencing, both in Southern California and in the United States, with this discussion on immigration that so often devolves into black and white and can inspire so much hate-filled rhetoric. How we might see this in a few decades? Are we going to look back and see this era much in the same way as we saw the struggle for African-American civil rights, you know? Or is that, you know, is that too simplistic a comparison?
No, I think that's exactly the way we will remember it. I think that this period we're living is a period of intense transformation of American society. I think that generally speaking, the immigrant experience is one of becoming assimilated. I know that's a bad word for many people, into the American experience. But at the same time, that process of assimilation is also one that changes what it means to be American. So I think that especially these vast waves of immigration that we have from all over the world, really, from, you know, from East Asia and South Asia, from Latin America, especially that those are transforming American society, and that it's also leaving a certain wound in America, much in the same way that the African American experience was a deep wound and remains one in the United States. That this is another wound that we have to deal with. We've brought people to work who come from very poor places, oftentimes, who have a legacy of struggling with that poverty at the same time, who deal with an increasing inequality and lack of opportunity in our country. At the same time, in that struggle to become part of the society, beautiful things happen. We produce thinkers. We produce great artists. We produce this whole awakening. I believe sort of that I'm on the I believe that I'm going to witness, that we are going to witness this renaissance akin to the Harlem Renaissance, where this influx of people from tropical places is going to change what it means to be an American.
Hmm. On that note, Hector Tovar, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck with your book.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
My guest is Hector Tovar, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, LA Times weekly columnist, and author of three books, including Translation Nation, The Tattooed Soldier, and this latest book that we've been discussing, The Barbarian Nurseries. This is part two of a two-part interview. You can watch a video of the entire interview on our website at uprisingradio.org, as well as find out about Hector Tovar's three upcoming book events. He'll be at the annual 10th Annual West Hollywood Book Fair this Sunday, October 2nd at 2:45. 5 p.m. You can find out more at westhollywoodbookfair.org. Next Tuesday at Skylight Books at 7 p.m. That's October 4th at 7 p.m. at Skylight Books, 1818 North Vermont Avenue in L.A. And then Wednesday, October 5th at 7 p.m. at Romans Books, 695 East Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena. Check out his own website at hectortobar.com.